If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. Welcome to Fightful. Here with a name you know, someone who I mentioned a number of times, extremely important to my career. One of the big reasons that Fightful exists, in my opinion. We got Mark Capani, formerly known as Muhammad Hassan, ahead of the Dark Side of the Ring episode covering his career that airs on May 27th on Vice. Mark, it's lovely to see you. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too, man. It's been a little while. I saw you last year.
Yeah, I ran into you at WrestleCon. I had a very narrow window, and I was like, you know what? I want to swing by there at least to say hi and thank you to you. I mean, it was wild how we got connected. I reached out to a Twitter egg account that may or may not have been you, and we set up an interview almost 10 years ago.
You were the first in-depth interview that I ever did post wrestling.
Yeah, I was shocked, man. Like I was trying to separate myself from what they call the aggregators and show that I could do something different. And to me, there was no more interesting story than yours. And I reached out to a Twitter account with your name on it that hardly tweeted, and you're like, "Yeah, I'll do an interview." And I was so blessed to have gotten that.
So was I, because that interview, I thought you did a great job. It was a lot different than I thought it was going to be. And I think that opened me up to start and do more interviews slowly. It took a little bit of time. But after that interview and after reading what you wrote and seeing what they could be, as opposed to a lot of the interviews that I had read previously, definitely piqued my interest. And I've been doing a lot more interviews since. So I credit you for that. Otherwise, I'd still be in my cave tweeting once every 7 years.
Well, I appreciate it. And that's what I wanted to do. I was like, well, I felt like it was socially an important topic to cover, especially considering that I know you later on did an interview with my friend Matt Kuhn. I think Robbie and Robbie's show as well. And that like led you to get back into the ring a little bit from what I understood.
Yeah, it kind of did. Again, I hadn't talked about it. I had a really good interview with them. They were great. And it really gave me a lot of perspective on myself and what I had been doing for the last decade or so. And someone reached out to me after that interview and asked if I wanted to come and do an appearance, which I hadn't done a lot of appearances at that point. And I really still haven't, but it was local and it was kind of like, okay, I'll come do an appearance. And when you got there, you always bring your ring gear. I got in and I had been in a ring in a long time. So I got in with some of the kids that were down there, rolled around a bit, and he offered me a match. And it was just that spontaneous. I was like, sure. You know, I had no intention of making a comeback. I wasn't, you know, trying to break the internet. It was just like, you know what? It was a Saturday night. I haven't wrestled in a decade. You know, let's see if I could still do it. And then from that point, I did one or two more matches with some of the local talent, but you know, and that was it. I don't have any plans of going back, but yeah, that interview kind of springboarded my desire to kind of get in the ring and just relive it a little bit. And it was fun. I'm glad I did.
I remember you had just said you don't have any plans on doing that, but naturally when people see what you look like still to this day, people are like, oh, well, let's get him back in the ring. I mean, is that like a flattering thing, or is it a, oh, here we go again type of thing for you?
It's flat. It's funny because I'm 45 and I've kind of grown up working out and nutrition. And I've always been very big on that. Even when I was in college, I used to write down everything I ate and calculate my protein, my carbs, my fat. So I appreciate that compliment. I will tell you that I can run in a straight line and I can lift weights, and anything that deviates from those two very simple things, I will be popping joints and falling down. I mean, I'm pretty sure I have a broken foot right now from playing basketball with my son, you know, broken finger. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just the older I've gotten, the less time I have to dedicate to some of the more important things to staying agile and in ring shape, such as stretching, things like that. But I still enjoy working out. I still enjoy running, and I still enjoy the nutritional aspect of it. So physically, all aesthetic purposes, I look like I'm in great shape, but to be in ring shape, to be able to go, to be able to get in there and move, and it's a whole nother beast. And I don't think I would last very long in a ring today.
How did you feel when you were in the ring? Like, did you feel okay? Or is it one of those things where you're like, okay, I'm fortunate that I'm in one piece after all this? Cause I remember you had told me, like, even like, cause we did a follow-up interview and you're like, man, I've dealt with some concussion issues that followed me after wrestling.
I felt okay. The rings are a little different. They're a little smaller, so they're a little stiffer. The first couple bumps, like anytime you do it again, he kind of jars you a little bit. I didn't bump a lot, you know. I mean, the fact that I was, this was 7 years ago still, but, you know, the fact that I was older and being a baby face, I didn't have to do a lot of bumping and feeding like I would as a heel. So I felt pretty good. Yeah, definitely been some lagging injuries, and I was in wrestling for such a short time. Like, you look at guys who, you know, I came up with Randy Orton and John Cena, and those guys, I don't know how they pull themselves out of bed every day. I mean, I've had two neck surgeries, actually three in the last year. And I was only in wrestling for 5 years. I mean, the amount of punishment that you put your body through, it really takes a toll after a while. And I was very fortunate that I was out of there pretty quick. I can imagine some of these guys, and I've experienced it. I've seen some of my friends, and you know, when you're younger and you watch some of the older veterans kind of get up and walk around and you see the pain that they're in, it just becomes a part of your day. But at the same time, like, I could not imagine getting in the ring 3 or 4 days a week at 45 years old, like some of the guys that I see do it.
We had mentioned you talking a little bit more in the last 10 years about your wrestling career. I know you did an interview with Chris Van Vliet, lovely human being, Wonderful guy. But how did you feel being approached for Dark Side of the Ring, which obviously in name only can be somewhat ominous, but it covers a lot of varieties of stories. Like, yours has a particularly happy ending to it, but they're not all like that.
No, and I watched Dark Side of the Ring. I love Dark Side of the Ring. Like, I'd watched every episode when I got the call from the producer. And it was Chris who put that out into the universe. Why don't you do a Dark Side episode? And I was like, I don't want to do a Dark Side episode. It always ends tragically. Like, why would you wish that upon me, is I think what I said to him. But, hearing them present this idea that they had for examining the controversial aspect of wrestling and then the life after wrestling was pretty appealing, because it was different than anything I'd ever really seen on Dark Side. And you're right. They explore controversial events and situations and then controversial people, which typically end tragically. But I was not into it at first. I really was like, I have a very different life. I have a different career. You know, the irony of being the most controversial wrestler that couldn't even survive on television after the London bombings to now being the director of human resources isn't lost on me, but that comes with a lot of responsibility and really a lot of obligation to portray myself as a professional for the school district that I work for and for my family. So Dark Side really did a great job of selling me on the what if storylines that it could be. Like, we're not going to do this. We're going to do this. And we're not going to focus on just the controversy. What it ultimately evolved into is we're going to focus on the human being behind the controversy and how that affected you, not only as a person, but your career and what you've done post-wrestling. And I was hooked after that. And the people over there are just all so friendly and so great that it's really hard to, you know, they're just so accommodating. And it was such a fun day to go over. And I worked with three guys, cameramen, the two of the producers, just kind of getting set up. And the interview was like 6 or 7 hours, but it really was. And the thing I remember most from it was, like, the camera is literally right here in your face, Even though the angle doesn't really demonstrate that because it looks like it's a little bit more distant. But I remember just eventually feeling so comfortable and having that conversation that, when I saw the screener, I sat there just looking at the TV for 10 minutes, and maybe not that long, but my wife's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it was surreal to see that part of my life played out in story form and to be so proud of it." They did a great job. So it was definitely one of the better decisions I've made, probably second to doing the interview with you over 10 years ago.
That makes me feel very good. One of the things I was so happy that they did, they got Jim Cornette for this, and people can think what they want of Jim Cornette's approach and opinions. He was somebody I reached out to for your article, and we had a little bit of correspondence, but the times didn't quite match up. So he was somebody who was very influential when you were coming up and doing a lot of that stuff. So I felt like that was very important. Had you talked to him at all in the last 20 years or anything like that?
I bumped into him, not as much as I'd like, because I love Jim Cornette. Sure. I mean, for anything that bad that anybody could say about him, I have a million good things I could say about him. He always had our backs in OVW. Him and Danny, Rip Rogers, those guys always had our backs, and he still has my back. Having Jim Cornette tell my story from his perspective and really to portray it through a lens that I really didn't experience. When I saw that, I still have to text him and Snitsky and Chris Masters and Maven and thank them for their perspective in that episode, because it really brought to life a lot of the things that I couldn't articulate. Jimmy especially, because he was so influential in my career. And I remember when all of this went down, and I remember going back to Louisville and talking to him and Danny Davis. And I think from what I remember, I almost felt like they were going to be disappointed in me, that I failed. And they were the complete opposite. They had my back, and they were like, fuck those motherfuckers, Jimmy. So to have him speak so well on my behalf, it was really an honor. I'm just truly grateful for what he did.
You mentioned Maven. You also popped up on his channel, which is a juggernaut, a force. Now, has that given you any thought of maybe in the future I do a channel like that as well?
I would like to find my niche. I work really hard. I have four children. So I would love to be able to find some sort of side hustle where, some of my experiences would benefit others, maybe fitness, nutrition. But being on Maven's show was just such a blast. The way that we did it, we did it at the high school that I worked at, or the district that I work at. We watched old film, and it was Maven and I weren't particularly close, but we were friends and we spent time together, and we had a very similar experience in the business. So, seeing somebody after all that time, it was like hanging out with an old buddy, and just kind of watching and laughing at yourself, because we watched a lot of funny things too. But, I will say that watching Maven and the screener that they sent me from Dark Side, I feel like at the 6 hours I spent interviewing, they got about 20 minutes of screen time with me, and the other 20 was Maven. He steals the show, but his perspective is so interesting, and he really lived a very similar experience that I lived, albeit different at the same time. But again, his perspective, Jimmy's, all those guys, it was really cool to kind of hear other people tell my story. But yeah, I think Maven's going to probably want to bring me on as a co-host for some of his shows that he does, some of his clips.
Maven's is such a personable and wonderful dude as well. Another person that gets talked about in Dark Side of the Ring was a person that I talked to for your feature, Sean Devari. And perhaps one of the most surprising things that emerged from that feature was, I want to say maybe a day after I interviewed Sean, he goes, "Hey, do you have Mark's number? Because I would love to talk to him again." And I was like, "You don't?" It made me feel like I had unlocked something there. And I was like, "Yeah, let me check." And I saw that you guys did do an appearance after that together. What was that like reuniting with him after all that time?
It was awesome. So Sean and I lost touch for a while. And I think that was really part of the period in my life where I avoided anything wrestling. And Sean was such a great friend to me when we were in the WWE. Sean was the only reason why I survived as long as I did. Without Sean, who knows what would have happened to me. But definitely had a disconnect, because at that point in my life, I didn't want anything to do with wrestling or anybody in wrestling. And I couldn't relive that that disappointment in my head over and over and over again. And Sean was a constant reminder of that disappointment and what could have been. And so we naturally lost touch. But I'd say in the last 10 years, like, we have hung out, we've done some appearances together. We've traveled together to do some appearances. He came over to my house for Easter 2 years ago when they were in town. We talk on the phone more regularly, not as often as I'd like, but we're both very busy. And we just spoke not too long ago, maybe a month or two ago, and we still text each other all the time. So it definitely reignited our friendship, which definitely was, you know, my fault, because I was the one avoiding him and avoiding the, like I said, the memory, and the, you know, the pain of what happened in wrestling. But it's great to see him now. And we hung out, in Philly when I saw you, and we had a good time. So definitely, I definitely miss spending time with him. He's a great guy.
I know a person that you had kept in touch with, at least to some degree, is the late, great Chad Gaspard, because you all worked on a project together. And unfortunately, he's no longer with us. I did see that you guys had together, like, promoted a project years prior that you had done together. What was that like working with him, not just in a wrestling capacity, but outside the wrestling world? Because he is so revered and loved.
Yeah. So I met Chad when he came to OVW, and he was Beast. And I had been down there, you know, for a little bit, maybe a couple of years. He came in and we started hanging out. You know, there's a group of us that spent all of our time together. We'd wrestle together. We'd go out to lunch. We'd hang out at night. I remember Chad used to bounce at a bar, and we'd go see Chad at the bar. Fast forward, you know, I had my career, a brief career, and then it's over with. And then Chad's just kind of starting to come into his own with Crime Time. And so Chad was always very interested in movies. Him and I were huge movie fans. We spent a lot of time talking about movies, and he knew that I was writing. And I had picked up a couple screenplays. And so he had sent one of the screenplays that he had written to me. And at the time it was more like a treatment. It was small, but it was based on a couple of movies that we both really loved. And we started talking about it, and we came up with, you know, kind of a concept that was based on the original. And then him and I started working back and forth until we expanded into a full length screenplay. A lot had happened in between the time that we had written that until now. But really, that became a screenplay, became a graphic novel. Then the graphic novel got picked up and sold. And then the graphic novel was now being turned into a screenplay. After Chad passed, his wife and I, his widow and I now, had been collaborating with a different, with a group called Scout Comics. They were the ones that originally had released it as a graphic novel. And Scout's goal and our goal was to eventually have this made into a movie, into, really, it's funny, again, the screenplay made into a graphic novel, made back into a screenplay with some much needed updating. So we've had a lot of movement on it. You know, we signed with State Street Productions. They've done some big movies, The Hate U Give, the new Bob Marley movie that came out last year. They brought on a writer and a director, and they're currently working on the pitch, and they're pitching it to some major studios. So we definitely could use a little bit of luck, but it's a solid screenplay. The idea is, it's a great concept. It's very unique. I haven't seen anything like it in 20 years. And then the director, writer, and the team that we have from Scout and State Street that are working on it really understand what Chad and I were kind of going for. They really understand our influence, and they kind of absorbed the graphic novel and the screenplay, and then it came out through them in a very fresh and unique way. So I have a lot of hope. You know, I try not to get too excited, because I don't know, the movie business, it's like, we'll get back to you next week, and then a year later you hear, but it's positive. It's all been positive. So him and I, that's been our heart and soul. And you know, my goal is to get that produced and get it on screen, just in Chad's memory. You know,
and it's been something that's been a part of your life for
a long
time. Of like 15 years at this point, I think.
Yeah. We 2008, 2009, is where we started putting that down. The one thing that I'll say about Chad is that when Chad took the idea of this screenplay, which I had mentioned before, and I won't get into it, but it was rejected by one of the major agencies because they wanted the star, the protagonist, to be white. And we wrote him as black because it was always supposed to be a vehicle for Chad. So the next idea was, Chad was going to make this into a graphic novel, and I had no money. I mean, this was the point in my life where everything was down. I was working at UPS overnight, putting myself through school, you know, living in an apartment back in Syracuse, New York. And I just said, this is yours now. Like, I don't have any money to give you, you know? And Shad said, we're 50-50 no matter what. And said, I got you. And he even made me sign a contract that said, we're 50-50 no matter what. So that's the kind of guy that Shad was. And so the least I can do now is put everything I can into it, with Syl, with you know, his wife, to get it on screen for him.
There's another gentleman I want to talk about, and I'm going to pop up the picture right now. This guy, Tommaso Ciampa. I remember when doing the interview with you, I was like, yeah, the guy who was your lawyer is now a top NXT star. And you were like, you didn't watch a lot of wrestling. And you're like, no, you're like, there's no possible way. I was like, yeah, he's a top guy. He was very young then. Have you all at any point ever reconnected? I know it's something he's been asked about a lot, especially like in his Chris Van Vliet interview as well.
No, I haven't. And my experience with him was limited. He was, you know, the baby face, good looking kid, went out there. That was, I think, what my shock was, the picture you just showed. Like, I remember him as our attorney, which he was obviously very young to be an attorney. He must have been like the Doogie Howser of attorneys.
Yes.
When he was 12. But that was my only experience with him, you know, and he did a great job out there. And then I see that picture of him, and then he's extremely talented wrestler now. It is just a completely different person. So I didn't know him.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know, other than the work you did with us, but I was caught off guard, and I still am. You look at that. That's a huge progression for him, man, going from that clean cut, good looking little Italian guy to now he's got the big beard and he's a badass man in the ring. Definitely.
He is. I also spoke for the feature that I did with you with Court Bauer, who was a writer then, and Shane Helms, who, you know, was prominently featured back then. And both of them were like, if he were plopped into today's or even 2016's locker room, half that stuff wouldn't have happened. Like Court Bauer said, that's the fiercest locker room because it was emerging out of a period where kayfabe was being broken a lot. But then you had a lot of people that were working really, really hard and going overboard to protect it and would overcompensate. Shane Helms said the things that you got heat for, 9 out of 10 people would get heat for them. But as a product of you having the belief of the office and the push that you had, it made it worse on you. At any point, did like WWE or Vince or anybody ever reach back out to you and be like, maybe we do something again in the future? Maybe you talk in a documentary, maybe anything like that?
No, and I wouldn't expect them to. I mean, I've always taken responsibility for my missteps in the locker room and outside of the locker room. I definitely wasn't a perfect person back then. I definitely learned a lot. I look at, you know, that was a tough locker room. And Sean had said that to me, you know, a lot of times after. And Shane Helms knows what he's talking about. I definitely respect Shane's opinion about anything. It, definitely a very different locker room. Definitely a very different scene. And the character never would have worked in 2016, obviously, because of the change in society. But would I have worked better in that locker room? Maybe. again, it's something that I look back on and I accept responsibility for, and I made plenty of mistakes, but I grew from them and I learned a lot from them, and they've developed me into the person I am today. I mean, everything that I've learned today is from my failures, you know, not my successes, but I do appreciate hearing that, because there's a long time where I just blame myself for everything that happened. And again, I still hold myself accountable for everything that I've done. I don't think you grow as a person unless you do. You can blame people all you want. You're going to be back in the same spot you started. But at the same time, it's nice to hear other people recognize that a lot of the things, or some of the things that I had to deal with that were really detrimental to the character as well as my career, were a product of the time and not the product of me as a person. So it is nice to hear that.
And when I talked to Court, he was on the writing team, and he said, when guys get taken off TV, he's like, most of the times it's like they're stalking you if you're a writer. Like, what's going on? When am I coming back? And he said that with everybody, it's just like everybody kind of understood, like, how do you repackage Muhammad Hassan, which got brought up in Dark Side of the Ring. It's a tough one to go back on unless you come back under a mask or face paint or something like that.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of conversation. I didn't push it either. I didn't push it because I think – whether I realized it or not at the time, I was extremely depressed and broken from what had happened. So I didn't push it. I mean, I might have inquired, but I think that was the main issue, is you have this character that had such a unique perspective and such a unique run in the WWE. How do you repackage somebody so they're just not like, it's just Hassan wearing white people's clothes, you know, like, you know, that Hassan trying to pretend like he's Italian now, you know? So there wasn't a lot of conversation of what to do with me afterwards. And I think because of how it ended, I don't think they had a lot of, I don't think they had any intention of bringing me right back or bringing me back at all. And again, granted, if I would have went out and I would have wrestled the indies and done other shows and other promotions, maybe eventually I would have found my way back there with a new character. But at that point, after everything that had happened, I turned my back on wrestling and I was done. I just didn't want any part of it anymore.
How do you feel that your perception has shifted or changed among the Arab or Arab American community since then? Because we will regularly have people that say, like, well, obviously it's not the direction we wanted to go, and he was not Arab American, but I've noticed that there's been a shift socially in like how you're perceived looking back, because people know it wasn't your call to do that gimmick. It was WWE's call.
I think there's been a shift. I think that initially when the character came out, I think Middle Eastern people in this country felt like they had a representative. And then when the character became more controversial and really the irony of me speaking about, you know, not getting a fair chance and then not fighting fair, it started to become more of a caricature, and it really isolated the character. And I think it really alienated the character from Middle Eastern fans in this country, because now I'm not just representing them, I'm representing them in a very negative way. And I think that a shift, I think that people 20 years later recognize that I was a 23, 24 year old kid. I think people have more sympathy for the fact that you're not going to turn an opportunity like that down in a position that I was in or anybody was in. And I also think they recognize the character remains within its time. I mean, that character would never exist outside of 2004, 2005. And again, if the London bombing didn't happen, we wouldn't have made it much further, because the nature of the character was insensitive to begin with. I think my perspective has changed, because during the time, I didn't understand the levity of I didn't understand how serious that character was being taken. I mean, I was 24, 25. Sean's like 12, you know, he was like maybe 19 or 20. You know, we're kind of living this gimmick, and we're kind of living our dream, traveling, doing all these shows. We know we're getting heat. We know that, you know, there's people upset. But it wasn't until much later that I realized how insensitive that character was. And like I was saying earlier, how that character was being pushed to depict Muslim Americans and Middle Eastern Americans, and the things that character was doing was not representative of them, and it wasn't helping, it was hurting. And that's what I disagreed with, what the character, the direction we were going in. And that's when I became vocal about it. Granted, again, I take responsibility for the fact that I played the character. I was doing those things. I'm holding myself accountable, but I wasn't writing the script. You know, I might be saying the words and I might be generating those words, but I definitely wasn't the one who was creating those storylines and coming up with the ideas that we had come up with. So I'm glad that people recognize that I am not a person trying to deceive and bring down, Middle Eastern Americans. I'm glad they recognize it was a character. And I hope they appreciate that I played that character well for what it needed to be at the time. And then I hope they really appreciate that that character's gone and it will never come back.
When I last spoke to you in an interview, you had become a social studies teacher, which I think is quite a full circle moment considering the nature of that character. And obviously you've climbed the ladder from an administration level. Did that experience aid you at all in your education as far as helping people with social studies? Because I mean, this is a very unique situation that you experienced.
You know what? That's what I love about the Dark Side of the Ring episode is they did such a nice job of tying what was happening in wrestling to real world events, whether it predated or it was contemporary with my run. But it absolutely helped me as a social studies teacher because it made me understand that history is a matter of perspective. What we view as history in the United States of America is very different than what history may be in Europe or in Africa or in South America. And so when I taught history, I always try to bring multiple perspectives about a topic to the classroom and let them decide for themselves. I mean, being a good social studies teacher is not telling someone your opinion. It's providing them with the opportunity and the ability to think critically. And that's what I loved about teaching. I would do everything I can to examine multiple perspectives on the same issue. And then it wasn't necessarily tell me what this is about. It was tell me why it was written this way. What's the influence? What are they trying to do? What emotions? It's kind of what I would expect and what I would like teachers to teach about modern media today, because modern media is just living history. And you look at the different news outlets and you look at some of the different stories that we see, and it's not so much as what is happening, it's why is it happening, and why are we seeing it in this way. So being in my experience, it certainly helped me be a better teacher, and having the life experience that I gained through, you know, the ups and then the ultimate failure as a 25-year-old, which I would say as a 25-year-old, I experienced more failure than most people, should, but I did. It definitely made me a more steady person, not perfect, definitely flawed, but it definitely gave me a lot more tools as I matured and grew up that I was able to use to help kids realize their potential and what they need to be.
I'll never forget, almost as soon as we started to do that interview, you said something, and it was, psychologically speaking, we despise the traits in others that we see in ourselves. And that was something that, like, I would start to really notice, like, whether it become characters or heel work or just human beings in the world and all that. And I think that the fact that you experienced what you did and then went and educated to this point, thousands, probably tens of thousands of people on the world and history, and not only that, but helping them in the administrative roles that you have since been in as well, where you're overseeing many others. I think that is such a wonderful connection to the experience that you went through.
It is. It's for me, it's the fact that I experienced so much so quick and lost it so quick and spent so many years searching for something that at the point in my life where I felt the most lost, I feel like I had the most support and the most insight as to why I needed to turn it around. And teaching and being in the field of education, as stressful as it is, because it is very stressful, it's a much different field than I entered even 12 years ago, has brought a lot of rewards and has brought a lot of stability and really perspective to my life. And most importantly, my family. That quote that you mentioned, it's still true. People, you look at the traits in others and it's you despise them in yourself. I think the best example of that is when you have children and, I hear my son whining, you know, that his head hurts, and I'm like, stop whining. And I'm like, yeah, you whine all the time, but everything that I went through and everything that I still go through, because I'm still a work in progress and I'm still working hard to be a better person, is all built upon the experiences that I've had in the past. And so nothing can change it. No amount of wishing or what if could change it. Nothing can change the time that's passed. I can't go back. I certainly can't speed it up. I can't slow it down. But I think the important thing is that you learn that you make the most out of the time that you have, and that you help others do the same. And so I hope in some small way that I've been able to do that based on the experiences that I've had.
Just a couple more before we wrap up. And a reminder, guys, Dark Side of the Ring, May 27th on Vice. How often do your students be like, or were your students like, my dad said that he watched you wrestling back in the day?
Yesterday.
Did you get thrown through a stage by The Undertaker?
Yesterday.
Really? Yesterday.
It happens all the time. It's funny because kids will say they remember me, and I'm like, you sure? Because you weren't even, you know, conceived by the time I was off TV. But when they say their dad does, you know, a kid yesterday in the hallway at the high school was walking by, and Mr. Capati, you know, and they're respectful by. He's like, my dad said he used to love you all the, you know, watch you all the time. He loved you when he was, you know, what a kid. It's like when he was a kid. It happens all the time. Wrestling has been a great icebreaker in education. I know that when I first started, there was some question by some of the people, the districts that I had worked for, as to whether or not this would translate. And it's a great icebreaker with kids. Kids know that I've had experience outside of the classroom. It's been great with parents as well. I think it's also the way I portray myself and what I make of it. But people recognize me probably more so than when I first started teaching. When I first started teaching, I was, you know, just getting married, having a kid. I didn't spend a lot of time in the gym. And now that, you know, my kids are older, you know, I'm in the gym a lot more. I've rededicated my life to it. So I think people recognize me more, especially because I do more appearances now. But I've never had a negative experience with a student from it. I've always had positive experiences. And anybody who had any doubts about that would completely agree that my past has been nothing but beneficial to my present and my future in education.
Do you watch much wrestling or any today?
I watch a little bit. I definitely, you know what I love watching is History Vault. I obviously have the History Channel. I discovered on History Vault that they have access to all the WWE biographies. And so if I can't sleep at night, I'm downstairs, you know, watching, you know, they're really cool. Like The Undertaker and Steve Austin and like, you know, all these guys that I grew up idolizing and got to work with. It's cool to kind of watch where they came from. And I'll flip it on once in a while. And I've seen a lot of the local, not local, all the young talent, that have come through, and they're just, their game and their craft is just so much more focused than what I remembered when I was there, that it's pretty impressive. And I think a lot of it has to do with the experience, the leadership in the company, and the people who they have behind the scenes, like a Sean Daivari, like a Hurricane Helms, who really know how to make these guys look good, but more importantly, explain to these guys what they need to do to look good and why. And so every time I flip on, and I love that it's on Netflix now, because again, I could just throw on Raw and watch Raw, or, you know, I'll see like AEW come on and I'll watch them. I'm always entertained. I love wrestling still. I really, truly do. It's just the amount of time I have daily to watch TV is about 45 minutes before I pass out in bed. And I don't think my wife would really appreciate if I always had wrestling on. So, you know, we're watching only Murderers in the Building instead. It's a great show. But so I still love it. And again, I really respect the talent and the progression of WWE. It's just been an amazing thing to watch.
And last one, I know that you did some work with Virtual Basement for the Wrestling Code video game. They had touted that. What was it? How were you approached for that? And what exactly did you do? I know it's not out yet, but.
No, it was a long time ago. I think I was the first person. I might've been one of the first few people that they had do motion capture. And I didn't do any of my moves, obviously, in the ring. I did promos. You know, I remember Ashton was the guy who approached me, and I think he might've reached out to me on Twitter too. I could be wrong. I'm trying to think of how I got in touch with him. It honestly, that was like pre-COVID. Like that was like 5 or 6 years ago, I think. Maybe it was during.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
I've been spending a lot of time and money working on that game.
Yeah.
I did the motion capture, and it was kind of like he had this idea of me coming back and kind of claiming revenge for the wrongs, which I thought was really cool. So, but I know I was one of the first to do it. So I'm guessing that it's been so much time has gone by that the technology that they're using now is a lot better. So I'm curious to see how it comes together. I told my kids at the time that I was going to be in a video game, and they asked me why I couldn't be in a cool game like Fortnite. So, you think that you're doing things that are going to impress your kids, and they're just not really impressed with anything.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Guys, Dark Side of the Ring, Tuesday, May 27th on Vice. Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking the time, but not just that, for What you doing that interview did for my career and my life, I want to say thank you so much for that. I mean, it really allowed me to do something that I wanted to do, and I appreciate that so much. But as we wrap up, tell the people about Dark Side of the Ring and maybe a little bit about your experience there as we head into that episode.
No, first of all, you would have been here no matter what interview you did with me. You have obviously the talent. This is one of the better interviews that I've done in a long time. So I appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciate you having me back on. I will say that the Dark Side of the Ring episode that's coming out May 27th, 10 o'clock. We're doing a watch party the next day at my friend's bar because it's on a little bit late at 10 o'clock, and we want the kids to be there. But it's something that when I watched, again, like I said earlier, I was unsure of, but when I watched it, I was immensely proud of what I had accomplished in such a short period of time and what I accomplished afterwards. And it really put everything into perspective, not only about me and my life, but also some of the things that I've been trying to teach my own children, as well as the students that I've had in the last 12 years. So Dark Side of the Ring is a really awesome show. They did a great job of kind of tying in a lot of different elements from what was happening in 2004, 2005. And I love how they go back to OVW. Those were some of my best days. And so reliving some OVW days, I actually went back on YouTube and found some of my old matches, and I was watching some of my old matches.
Oh,
so it was really cool to kind of see all of that progression all the way up until, you know, the end of my career and what happened afterwards. So if anybody's interested in, not me, but in that era of WWE history, because it was transformative, in my opinion, for the business. Sean Daivari always said that was the end of the Attitude Era. And I'd have to agree, not personally ending it, but the fact that WWE realized that there is a line, and if they cross it, it's going to hurt them financially. So if anybody's interested in that, I suggest you watch.
Guys, please check it out. And again, thank you to Mark. But guys, check it out. Dark Side of the Ring, May 27th on Vice. Until next time, my friends, we are out. If you're a wrestling...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Fan and you're looking to save money, NordVPN.com/Fightful is here to help. I completely cut the cord on cable because I've got NordVPN.com/Fightful. Over 2 years of NordVPN.com/Fightful costs less than 1 month of cable TV. Not only that, if you're a WWE fan, all you need is a Netflix subscription and NordVPN.com/Fightful. You get all their shows. It's not just that, though. You can get pay-per-views at the rate that they are paying overseas, as opposed to the incredible rates that we pay here in the States, thanks to NordVPN.com/Fightful. You might say, Sean, how's that possible? With NordVPN, you change your virtual location with just one click, and you appear virtually wherever you want to be. But it's not just that. They've got threat protection, they've got 24/7 customer support, and a 30-day money-back guarantee in case you don't like it, but you're going to. Go check out all the features over at NordVPN.com/Fightful.